Ron.
All right, so looks like we've got plenty of room for folks to have a few chairs. So stretch out. I know it's the last session of the day. Everyone's a little tired from all the excitement, but I'm Steve Walker. I'm with the SharePoint Customer Advisory Team, and I have spent the last 6-8 months working with MSIT on how to move SharePoint to the cloud.
And good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sean Squires. I'm in Microsoft IT, and I've been working with Steve in the product group to do just this, to actually start moving our internet footprint from on-prem to O365. So a quick overview of what we're going to talk about today is, just that. We're going to give you a quick recap, set some context, tell you what the environment that we have that we have on-prem. For those of you who have seen or heard IT talk about their infrastructure before, some of the context will look familiar, but we just want to set the stage of what we are on today, some of the methodology and approach behind why we're moving to the cloud and what we're moving to the cloud and the reasons behind the order and the sequencing, and then some of the customizations, some of the tools that we've used, some of the lessons we've learned along the way, and then, of course, leave time for questions. I was just talking to somebody out here in the audience earlier, and I think it's important to kind of look at this as a case study in progress. We are very much not done with the migration. We are just started. There's been a lot of planning, but just to set the stage.
Yep. So last session of the day, we'll have a little bit of levity. don't be this guy. It's not that easy.
Come on, there we go. So, do you sometimes feel like that guy over there? This is the guy in the vehicle there, looking at the onslaught of the wildebeest as they come charging towards him. And the reason why we put this slide in here is really just to kind of set the stage of this is what a lot of IT departments have to deal with, a lot of customers have to deal with, as they're thinking about how do I support my customers and the needs that they have. And obviously, one of the big buzzwords we've been talking about here at the conference, something you guys are dealing with, is just this consumerization of IT. Everyone wants to start bringing their own devices into the workplace, being able to actually work remotely, universal access, all these things. And the reason why we're talking about this is because you can kind of approach this a couple ways. You can just sort of ignore this. You can kind of wait till you get run over by the wildebeest. Or you can start to actually think about how do I start planning for this to actually start getting in front of my users and their needs and starting to build the environment and the platform that they're looking for.
And we use the migration to the cloud actually as a way to solve some of these problems, didn't we?
Yes, which is why, we talk about this. Yep. So, given that...
So, when you're thinking about moving to the cloud, this is not a forklift operation of taking everything you got and just sending it up on balloons to the cloud, right? You need to actually take a step back. When you're thinking about how you're going to move your organization to the cloud, what we want you to do is actually set down all that baggage that you've got that's dragging you down. You know, all the operational procedures, all the change management, all the goop and things that you actually work with day to day. Set that stuff aside and think about the end user experience and what you're trying to do for your end users first. And then we'll come back and address some of the obstacles because we spent months and months thinking about all of these other constraints that we had and why we couldn't do this and why we couldn't do that and, oh, that'll never work. And once you set those things aside and kind of think about what the goals are and what you're going to do and then try to address them, things become a lot more clear.
Yeah, so we had to do this, and then we realized, in retrospect, we should have always been doing this, and so we're encouraging you to think the same. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's, you guys keep hearing cloud, cloud this, cloud that. Cloud means lots of things. It's a veritable thunderstorm out there now. There's a lot of options. We have, you know, as you guys have seen over the past few years, we've cloud-enabled a huge number of our products. We've also got SQL Azure, Windows Azure as options, and if any of you have seen the new app model, Azure, very important piece of that. So we just kind of wanted to set some context there.
And this is great. It's a plethora of choices, right? And so obviously this really sets the stage for us to start thinking, again, how do we start meeting the needs of our customers and really start looking at our internet, how it's being used, and what we can actually start to move to the cloud. And so let's start moving into that. Let's set the stage here. So again, I did say at the beginning, I wanted to set just a really quick context. So I want to just fly through this. For those of you who've, again, seen us talk before about the IT infrastructure, our current on-prem footprint is large. We are actually located across three data centers around the globe, in Seattle, Dublin, and Singapore. And there's quite a bit of data. So we're going to just look at a couple of different aspects of this this ecosystem. The first is we just have a lot of terabytes of data, well over 30 terabytes of data across all three farms. This is across all of our SharePoint farms and platform.
So right now,
go ahead.
No, you're actually going to get to it.
Oh, okay. And actually, that amount of volume is also equated to a lot of sites. And this site count that you see here does, in fact, include all of our personal sites, all of our custom portals, and all of our utility or and the related collateral on those platforms. Go ahead, Steve.
Go ahead. Okay. Then the infrastructure to actually support this, as you guys can see, and I'd go ahead and click through. That's a lot of boxes. There's almost 100 IIS and app servers, 54 SQL servers, 24 index servers, just for FAST alone. That was the topology as it was before we moved to the cloud or started the move to the cloud.
And certainly this is a consideration to think about that we're probably going to pepper throughout the discussion is obviously one of the opportunities that we were looking at as a benefit, and we'll talk about this more in a second, is how do we start to reduce this infrastructure, offload it onto the O365 platform. So one other view, we've talked about the volume of our ecosystem. We've talked about the logical infrastructure of the ecosystem. Now let's just look at what's sitting on top of that. What is this comprised of? Again, some of you who have heard us speak before may have some inkling of the MSIT intranet. This is, in a nutshell, how we break it out. We have our self-service utility space, which includes everyone's personal sites, well over 200,000 of them, along with our utility environments, which is WhackWhack Team and WhackWhack SharePoint. They're two slightly different farms that serve the same purpose. The main difference between the two is Team gets upgrades and patches and new feature releases and has a little bit more going on than SharePoint, which is really more for a stable, steady state.
And you'll notice there's a definite delineation on the screen between what they call self-service and utility and custom/managed portals. Over on the left, the self-service utility, very low level of customization.
Yes.
This is a conscious decision that MSIT made because the more customizations you have in your farms, the higher cost it is to maintain them, operate them, patch them, upgrade them. And so it makes sense. If you're not doing that yet, as you prepare for the cloud, you're going to want to start logically separating your content that way. Hey, I've got 100,000 team sites that really don't have any customizations. It's all out of the box. Those are logically grouped together. And hey, I've got all these intranet portals over here that are very highly customized, full trust solutions. Logically, that's a different bucket. Okay.
And given that, now you look at the right, there is the customized space. So some of you have certainly heard us talk about MSW in the past and some of our other vertical portals centered largely around the types of businesses within that make up Microsoft HR, library, finance, legal. And these are the platforms. They're generally dedicated farms. They will typically have some level of customization. And when we're talking customization, we're not talking just master page and changes you would use through SharePoint Designer, but actually full trust code solutions on these farms. So obviously, that becomes a consideration when we're thinking about what's going to go to the cloud when. Now, you'll see below here, this is all sitting on the same shared services infrastructure. And that is an important point to call out, because we did have to think about our shared services infrastructure as well in terms of the planning of making the migration and the move to the cloud. You mean the environments that you have here? Oh, so we host all these environments. We know about them. We're the farm level admins of all of these platforms. Yeah.
So MSIT actually runs a shared services group, and we'll actually talk about that a little bit more in detail. But there are business divisions that host their own SharePoint implementations, so business group IT's departments, mm-hmm. and we're not talking about those right now as far as our migration to the cloud goes. Typically, if those types of business units don't trust a shared services organization to run their stuff, are they going to trust an external cloud provider? So that's a different conversation, and we'll be following up with those business groups later.
Yeah. But I will say, actually, to your point, just one final comment on that, is we have had groups who have self-hosted who have since been folded into this hosted platform to gain a lot of the benefits that Steve just pointed out. Yeah.
And one of the great ways, it may be a little too late to do this after, you know, post facto, but there's a capability in SharePoint 2010 to log all of the SharePoint implementations in your organization into Active Directory so that you can at least be aware of them. Now, if you didn't turn that on and set that up to begin with, then it's a little late. Microsoft is actually unique in that MSIT can't really use that functionality, because can you imagine how many developers with SharePoint installations we have? Yeah, it's a unique challenge, particularly to Microsoft. So.
Okay, so this is today. This is where we're starting to look at tomorrow. And notice how we're trying to, the one consistency you should see here is that we are trying to stay with the modern fall pumpkin theme here. So, but other than that, there are changes, obviously. As you'll start to see here, there's a lot of, I hope you can see a reduction here. There's a reduction in the number of farms and living inside this tenant. And you'll see that we're also collapsing even the utility spaces here as well. So if we start with that cloud bucket, obviously a lot of the My Sites moving to not just the cloud, but specifically to SharePoint 2013, moving to the new personal site infrastructure where you have SkyDrive Pro libraries to essentially replace the personal sites as you have in 2010.
So you guys had a very highly customized My Site experience prior to this move,
correct? We did, yes.
And when we moved over, what we had was good enough.
Yeah, actually it was. So we actually, in the last 2 years, for those of you who were at the SharePoint conference last year in Anaheim, a colleague and myself talked about a lot of the customizations we were doing to My 2010. And as Steve just said, it's one of the things that was fantastic is a lot of those customizations that we had done to My, as much of a proof of concept, as much of a partnership with the product group, as well as to meet business needs, have now been fully replaced as we've been moving people over to the cloud. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but the personal site space was actually one of the very first things we started to move everyone to the cloud on. Real quickly, you'll see here, same shared services infrastructure, but let's talk for a second that one on the far right, which is what's still on-prem. Mm. So just to be very transparent here, we're not able to move everything to the cloud yet. It's not just a matter of logistics and resources. It's a matter of functionality and what's available and ready for us in the cloud. And one of those things is obviously we have a lot of on-prem line of business applications that need to surface data on SharePoint. We have some content that we just aren't ready to move to the cloud, some business intelligence functionality that's just not available there yet. So what this starts to speak to is really the needs and support for some type of hybrid environment, okay?
Yep, and really to me, mentally, the line of business apps and the BI portals really are kind of one and the same. If you're accessing data on-prem, how are you going to do that from the cloud? Now, there's some capabilities in O365 to actually get back to your on-prem data, but you need to write an OData endpoint in front of it. It's a significant investment of time, effort, and money. And we decided for right now, that stuff's going to stay on-prem until we have a better story or better tooling or support for integrating those types of scenarios.
But certainly it is our intent to get to the cloud, and we are definitely all in and interested in certainly paving the way for folks like yourself to figure out what does that story look like, what gets in the way, be very clear with you guys, and obviously help drive those changes so that we can start to have very much a cloud-first thinking and an all-in story.
Yep.
So, boy, sorry guys, this clicker is, there we go.
So you've got an idea of what the physical and the logical groupings of SharePoint content and services that MSIT provides. Let's talk a little bit about the organization itself. For those of you that know anything about Microsoft, you know we're a fairly big organization. Total end user base, I think you guys support end up somewhere around 140,000 people if you count the vendors and you know other people that work on our networks. MSIT really breaks their organization up into a couple of groups. They've got collaboration services, Exchange, SharePoint, and Link. So they've very much aligned those folks with kind of how Office Division is looking at Office 365 all up. We see more and more features, especially in this release, starting to come out that stretch the boundaries between the products. And so it starts to make sense to have the same group of people managing the entire Office 365 quote stack.
Yeah.
And there's 47 full-time employees and 144 vendors. I think that includes even your help desk folks.
It does, yeah. Guys, these numbers are just really more for illustrative purposes. I don't think you can, it's hard to apply these to your own organization. I think what Steve said, what's reflected here is you'll even see we have library science folks listed in that group because there's a lot of content owners and providers that are included in these groups to make sure that obviously that the content that's served up on these portals is fresh and up to date and available to the users. And then, as Steve said, a lot of support folks. And also there's a lot of engineering folks sprinkled into both of these organizations, working both with the product group and also with our business customers in terms of creating solutions or helping them configure the right SharePoint experience to meet their business needs.
So if you look at the move to the cloud over about a 3 or 4 year time frame is really what we're trying to illustrate. And IT departments, a lot of times the management says, hey, let's go to the cloud, we want to save some money, right? and let's all be honest, you're going to spend some money to save some money, right? There was a fairly significant investment in both vendor tooling, additional hardware, additional ops vendors and folks to run the migration. And we're dipping into that pool right now. We're below the line as far as savings go. There's an investment that we've made, and we're looking to be able to turn the corner on, somewhere around that fiscal year 14. Once we've got a vast majority of the content and up in the cloud, and we can start to retire some of these on-prem farms and collapse those into more cost-effective units, so to speak.
And Steve, again, and then some of this stuff is already happening. Right?
That's right.
Yeah, because we're already, as we've started to move a lot of our initial runs to the cloud, a lot of those farms, we've been able to do some collapsing, backing up. So there's probably some storage needs that will last a little bit longer than actually needing to maintain web front ends. But at some point, those farms in total will be able to be collapsed, retired.
So we talk about the benefits that MSIT gets out of this. So the term evergreen infrastructure keeps coming
up. And Steve, aren't these everyone's benefits?
These are everyone's benefits. But specifically, since we're talking about MSIT,
yes.
These are the benefits that really drove MSIT to look at the cloud as an answer to a lot of the business problems that they have today. So less infrastructure to maintain. Who here loves running around patching servers? I got two in the back. We're hiring engineers in SharePoint Online. No, I'm kidding. But you're going to run around and patch servers less. You're not going to spend your time managing your high availability, your SQL clusters, your disaster recovery, all of that stuff that, I know there's some people that love that, but other folks find that to be somewhat of a burden or a cost on their organization. And people optimization. So, you saw that slide with a significant number of people on it. MSIT wants to be able to turn those people away from patching servers and running around and configuring SQL and log shipping and all that good stuff and turn them towards adding additional value into the business. If you go out and you talk to these business units about what SharePoint can do and what they can do with it, a lot of times that's very enlightening to them, right? And wouldn't you rather take those people who were installing hotfixes before and have them go out into the business and help them really achieve value out of the platform that your IT organization is offering?
And we'll share some stories with that as we get a little bit further into some of the other work that we've done, where we've already started to realize that sort of repurposing of folks where we've started to see more immediate gains. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then remember we talked about consumerization of IT and how people want to be able to work from where they're at on their own devices. This was a benefit for going to the cloud. Anybody can get access to their documents without VPN, without direct access. They can use social collaboration. They can use SkyDrive Pro. That's a huge win. Even within just the office division, which is where I work, you should have heard how loudly people exclaimed how happy they were that they weren't having to email specs around anymore, or they weren't having to jump through hoops.
Yeah, we were tossing earlier revs of this through our SkyDrive Pro library, and You guys all heard at Jeff Tepper's keynote earlier this week that the social app is available for download. So if you have some type of O365 tenant, you can actually use that. And we've been doing that to share some information back with the folks back at Redmond. So it's been very cool.
So we told you a little while ago to set the baggage down, but to be honest with you, we'll talk about the elephant in the room just a little bit. We did have some constraints that we had to come back and revisit, and we're not through all of them yet, but definitely had some security constraints. We're going to throw all of our data up in the cloud. That might scare your security guys just a little bit. So they're going to have some questions for you. They're going to have some concerns. Regulatory requirements. So Office 365 is hosted in three major areas of the globe right now. Mm-hmm. More plans in the future. But we had to make a decision on where we wanted to host this data.
Where's that, Steve? It was in here in
North
US.
America.
Yes.
You saw our chart earlier. Vast majority of the SharePoint corpus was here in North America, so we made the call to put that data in North America. So there's some regulatory concerns about data. What do you call it? Data.
Safe harbor.
Safe harbor.
Yes.
Safe harbor. Mm-hmm. So there's some concerns around that. So if you're a global organization, you're definitely going to want to understand how that impacts you. It could be so simple as you need to collect
terms of use.
From your users. Hey, yes, I attest that I'm aware that my data is going to be in North America. But little things like that, lawyers just love to jump all over you. Physical location. That's part of that. We talked about the line of business applications already. Your infrastructure, and we're going to talk a little bit about this later. But your network infrastructure, right? It's going to change the dynamics of your network infrastructure. You can't just assume that the WAN environment you built today is going to suffice for the move to the cloud. And then visibility, technical and health. We do have a service health dashboard for the service, but if you're used to going and grabbing IIS logs and trolling through that to find what your errors are, you're going to have to figure out other ways to make sure that you can diagnose and troubleshoot. So especially around your customizations, there's things that you can do to help there. And then hybrid. Hybrid was definitely a constraint. Any of you who've looked at our feature set for 2013, you see we have some hybrid features, primarily around search, but there's definitely some impact to operating two distinct SharePoint environments between the cloud and on-prem. So we'll talk about those a little bit.
Yeah, we'll show you how this has impacted some of our shared services stuff and so how we're dealing with that. And then obviously, this is a journey. This is there will be properties that will get to the cloud a little bit faster than others based on their dependencies for, like we talked about earlier, on-prem systems, just functionality that is there and when it will be available. So definitely has some impact on the schedule.
And I think to support that, Sean, you're saying some properties are going to go later, some properties are going to go earlier. Don't gate your cloud adoption on your migration.
Good point, Steve.
Don't make a plan that says I have to move 36 terabytes of data before I can open this thing up for people to use. You want to take an approach where you can, and we'll talk about it a little bit more, but you want to take an approach where you can open the cloud up for business and get people creating net new sites up there. While you're dealing with the migration and bringing their content from on-prem, you would actually be surprised how many people are perfectly willing to just move those 27 documents out of a team site up into a new cloud team site and not wait on the slow IT guys to get their site migrated. We know it's not the IT guys, it's actually the speed of light and the, anyway.
But that was a good point. I mean, just even, again, this is, our technology stack, so we were sort of thrusting people into this early. You've all heard about the dog fooding that we do at Microsoft. So this is a part of that, but again, just to amplify Steve's point, we had an intention of actually opening the doors early to the cloud. I think what we were surprised about was not how resistant people were, but rather how eager they were to say, yeah, I will do that, I will self-migrate. And that kind of helped us to get the right level of feedback to really help hone in on the stacking of what migration features we needed to focus on, what migration bugs were more important than others.
Yep. So obviously, before you get started, you want to lay the groundwork to be successful, and I wanted to talk about a few points here. MSIT used that migration to the cloud as an opportunity to clean house. If you hire a company that's going to charge you one price to move from one house to the other, you let them back the truck up, put everything in boxes, and take it over there. Easy, right? But if you have to either pay per box or move it yourself, you're probably going to pare down the amount of stuff you're going to take to the new house, right? So you really want to go through your sites. A couple of big things to note. There's more details here, but one, don't migrate content that's close to end of life. You know, if you're going to be archiving it off somewhere, it really doesn't make sense to move that to the cloud and then try to figure out how to archive
it. And in fact, Steve, didn't we use some of our governance stuff to actually figure out what was closer to end of life than others?
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And we'll be talking about a governance solution that MSIT built here in just a little bit. And don't migrate content that has not received usage. I mean, that's kind of stupid simple, but you'd be surprised. So we ran audits of the IIS logs to see who had been accessing these sites, and if a site had not been accessed by anything besides the search crawler in 6 months, probably not a lot of value to move that thing to the cloud. MSIT has an environment where end users can just go create site collections. So we get a lot of site collections that people go create. They use it for a short amount of time, and they just leave it. They leave it behind. Now we have governance tools that help kind of clean that up, but we got a little more aggressive with it.
Yeah, our governance tools still have a sufficient amount of time in the policy that, you know, we still needed something a little bit more draconian here in making these decisions.
Make sure you audit your corpus of sites for BI, Excel services. We talked about BI. We talked about line of business apps. Are they utilizing these features? We actually wrote some utility code that looked mm-hmm. through to see if they were using the data connection library for anything, right? I mean, if they have Excel workbooks up there that are just directly accessing a SQL database or something to that, that'll still work, right? But if you're actually trying to get server back to on-prem data connectivity, then you need to flag and identify those sites so that you can leave those on-prem. You don't want to move somebody into the cloud and then break everything that they're doing. That's typically not a good user experience. And then auditing the full trust customization. So are they using any features on the site that were installed through a full trust customization? Another thing I should have added here actually was there is a feature difference between SharePoint Online and SharePoint on-prem. We do not activate all of the features online. There is a matrix or a matrix of features that are supported online, published on TechNet, and we basically took that and the delta between the two, and we looked for any of those features. Okay.
In fact, that's also driving some of the planning for some of these other portals that we're going to move in the future. We're looking at not just where they map against what's available in the cloud, but also going back and really having those frank business discussions to figure out, hey, how do we either replace this solution or rebuild it? You know, first, is it necessary? And two, if it is, let's figure out if there isn't a product replacement or something that gets you most of the way there, then let's figure out how we either need to rebuild this as a cloud-based solution.
That's right. A lot of the... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, when you say we looked for those features, how exactly did you do that?
So we were able to actually run some logs against our farms to look for the full... Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies.
He asked how we were able to actually identify those features. We wrote code that actually iterated through our site collections. There's a solution we'll talk about later called AutoSites that governs all of the site collections within MSIT. And that gives us kind of the capability to say, hey, we want to go audit all of those things. And then we came up with a script that we could run against a site collection that would look for what features were activated and what was being used.
Going back to that first point about cleaning house, actually, so we have a couple solutions that we've talked with the public over the years that we've built going all the way back to like SharePoint 2007, things like largely in the ECM space, you know, like a page mailer solution, and we built some content ratings before it was available in SharePoint. And often what happened is these features would be activated, the solutions would no longer be actually used. So part of what we're doing is, you know, when figuring out, hey, let's find out first if the solution is there, and then is it actually being used. And that's a combination of, as Steve said, actually going and auditing what's actually deployed and activated on the server, but then also just having that business conversation, you know, because some of those programs, those content programs may have changed without anybody ever telling us. And so obviously we want to figure out, is that something you guys still really need and use? And a lot of times it's amazing how much you get done by just asking.
Yeah, so, just asking. Yeah. Do you really still need that? The other thing you want to look at when you're looking at these are a lot of the customizations that MSIT built and installed on their farms, we built it in 2013, or some flavor of it, or some method to accomplish it without that full trust customization. So we were able to take away a lot of those just by saying, hey, we've got new features. You know, you don't have to fill this gap anymore. We're going to take those features out of your site, and we'll activate this in the cloud.
Yeah.
And then understand how your content is secured. We crawled over this one a few times through the project. So I'll just give you one example. So when you do dir-sync, when you synchronize your Active Directory up to the cloud, any domain computed groups, which is what I call them, so things like domain whack all users, or authenticated users, those do not sync to the cloud. Those are computed on your local domains, right? So if you're securing content with those computed groups, those aren't available in the cloud. You have to ask yourself, what was the intent of that user? Most of the time, they were trying to share it with everybody in the company. I think, and David, you might have the numbers, but I think it was 70 or 80% of the time that was the intent of those people. They just happened, you know, we're a very Redmond-centric company, so they said, hey, Redmond all domain users, right? When what they really meant was, I don't care if anybody in the company sees this. And there are security groups in the cloud that represent both all of your users that can get to your tenancy, so there's everyone.
The everyone group.
And that includes people invited by, you know, as external users, so that might come into play. And then there's everyone in my organization, which is everyone that is synced in through Active Directory.
Right.
So you can kind of go back and have that business conversation with those users or you know, send them a questionnaire. Hey, what was your intent? Because these are your choices. And then when you migrate, when you have to do a mapping of the security groups when you use these migration tools, then you can do that mapping at that time.
And a quick sidebar. So Gaurav Doshi and Mary David talked about a lot of the sharing improvements in 2013. I believe it was yesterday afternoon. I do not have the number in my head at the moment, but to learn, you know, that sharing model using these groups that Steve's talking about has been already fantastically well received by the users that they moved to the cloud. Oh, this is much easier, and they're using groups that are actually mapped to the what's available in the tenancy. So
yep.
Yeah.
So the other thing, and we touched on it just briefly earlier, but analyze the impact on your network infrastructure. So do you have adequate ingress and egress bandwidth? All right. If you're hosting on-prem and you've got WAN environments and WAN connections between your sites, that traffic for your SharePoint farms is probably going over those site-to-site links, right? Now we're going to move all that content to the cloud. Do I still need as much bandwidth between my sites, or do I need more bandwidth out to the internet from each site? And we found that to be true for MSIT.
Yes.
And then also your ADFS. Do you have adequate capacity for ADFS? I mean, if you're going to turn that on, make sure you got enough ADFS servers that it doesn't come to a creeping crawl. We ran through that for a little while, too. So
we got through it. We got through it. Yeah.
That's right. And then determine the impact of hybrid. So you've got shared services like taxonomy and managed metadata, content types. Those types of things, and then also there's some data population, and Sean will talk about this a little bit more in depth here in just a few minutes.
Actually,
it's coming up, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we did have to build some things.
And this is sort of a quick, very modern UI summary of some of the things that we have built, like the colors. So we had, obviously, a migration strategy, which we've been talking to you guys about, and it was really around figuring out what was our path to start to get to the cloud? How, like as Steve talked about earlier, it wasn't a matter of making sure that we had all of our ducks in a row and we had so much stuff figured out that we were able to essentially move these many sites across these farms and then open up the doors for business. We actually wanted to figure out how to do it quickly and early. A lot of that was driven by dog food. We really wanted to get some feedback from our Microsoft population that really helped drove a lot of changes as we got closer to release of the product. But all that being said, there were some custom mechanisms that we needed to build. One of them actually ties directly to the decision to enable personal sites to be made available first in the cloud. Yeah. One of the things we wanted to do was when we set up the dir-sync, it's only bringing AD properties, right? So if somebody's already got a SharePoint personal site and we had a huge campaign, as I'm sure many of you have as well, where you told your users, hey, go fill out your profile. Go fill out all the about me's and the ask me abouts and languages you speak and where you went to school and all that good stuff. DirSync doesn't move that stuff to the cloud. Those are not AD properties, those are SharePoint properties. So one of the things that we did was we said, you know what, we need to figure out a way to actually replicate that data back to online. To online. So then when a user gets there, they would already have their photo, they would already have a lot of their SharePoint data. They would feel like, this is great, I've provisioned a new site, my profile is already there. So that was an important piece. And in fact, because we are in a hybrid state, we actually do need to replicate a few of those properties back to on-prem. So we are actually doing a UPA replication.
Wait, you're replicating both directions?
I am, but it's not, what do you
multi-master?
Call it? It's not multi-master,
okay.
No. Our master is the cloud. One of the things we did right before we actually started the program to get everybody move into the cloud was we put their on-prem profiles into a read-only state, locked them from editing so they could still see them and access them, but they were not available for editing. And we put clear instructions out there with folks saying, hey, you look like you're trying to do this. Go here and do that. And by the way, why don't you go set up your new SkyDrive Pro library and get rolling in the cloud? So that was a part of that piece.
So the point I wanted to try and read, don't try to do multi-master replication.
It's not a good
pick
idea.
Pick one as a master, and you can copy those properties to the other. But
so, and related to that, we also did that with taxonomy as well. We have really been, we were excited about the managed metadata service in 2010, worked pretty closely with the product group to make that happen and get it out in front of our users and educate them. So we've got enterprise content types flying around the company and people tagging content and, you know, using the MMS for their profiles. And so we wanted to make sure that we didn't lose any of that as well. So some of the other data migration and synchronization customizations that we are doing as well have to do with just taking our MMS term sets and making them available in our online shared services. Finally, the governance piece, real quickly, Steve will show you that in a bit, but we have essentially expiration policies and some custom self-site provisioning policies where we want to collect specific information from users when they create new team sites so that we can make sure that they're aware of what kind of content they could store there, no high business impact content, that type of thing, and then also put an expiration on there so we can make sure that we clean up these environments. And we've gotten a lot better over the last year. We had to be a little bit more aggressive when we wanted to make the move to the cloud. But nevertheless, when we wanted to start encouraging people to provision new team sites online, wanted to make sure that that stuff was in place there as well. Finally, the site provisioning. Steve talked about us wanting to get along with the lawyers. We did need to make sure that we let people know, especially since we were collapsing, in the case of my sites, three regional farms, in North America, EMEA, and Asia, to a single data center in the United States. We need to make sure that people were very aware of the fact that we were moving content or they were going to be publishing content to a US data center. So we just wanted to make sure that they were aware of what was happening, sign the terms of use. So and we'll talk about that and show you that in a second, but really it was just a matter of overriding the out-of-box first-run experience form, collecting some additional data, and then going back to the out-of-box experience. It worked out really well.
And I think before we even move on beyond this, something that Sean just said, and I don't want to gloss over too much, they had regional farms for my and team site content before. Remember we said we're moving to one tenant hosted in Chicago? We're collapsing all that data there. So all the users from Microsoft that are in India, that are in China, they're coming across to our data center in North America. And we have yet to have one help desk ticket about the performance of those sites across the,
nice point.
The
yes.
WAN. So there was a heavy investment in SharePoint 2013 to make sure that the pages render faster and that you only send the changes for the pages down. We're not round-tripping this huge payload every single time across the WAN. We'll let you know when the full case study comes out, but right now things look very promising. SharePoint Online also has capability that we built in the SPO service to edge cache or in content distribution networks all the JavaScript files and things so that they're out there closer to the users. So when you're looking at SharePoint Online and someone says, but we have all these regional users, think about it. Again, put that baggage down. Just because SharePoint 2010 and SharePoint 2007 were too heavy for you to do that, That doesn't mean SharePoint 2013 is as well. A lot of people will say, hey, but what about the big doc scenario? Well, use Folder Sync, right? Don't try to open those docs up over, you know, back and forth. There's also branch cache technologies. There's ways you can get around that. Running regional farms is expensive. When you move to online, you can say that you don't like this, but you can't set up a tenancy in each different region. So you are going to be constrained by that, and you need to understand what that does to your user base. But very promising experience
That's
today.
That's a good point. Thanks, so, Steve. Yeah, anyway. Yeah. I think the only other thing, we've talked about a couple of these other boxes. I think the only other one that I'd call out as well that might be of consideration to folks is you got to license users. So yeah. One of the things that we did was we just essentially wrote a PowerShell script that gets new users. Microsoft is hiring people, they get new employees, want to make sure that we get them properly licensed so that when they get instructed either through an email or a peer to say, go get your new personal site and SkyDrive Pro Library going, we're ready to receive them and set up their site for them.
Yeah, and there's PowerShell for doing the licensing for in the SharePoint Online administration. I don't know the name, Philip would probably know it, but there's PowerShell there that you can use. Basically what you guys did was actually just kind of write an automated process to run through that every day.
Yeah,
right?
Just every day, just look at what's new, and if they don't have a flag set, go ahead and flip the switch.
Yeah. But remember, licenses cost money, so.
Right, yes, yeah. No, we're not trying to get around that, no. So real quickly, let's just, we wanted to share with you guys just a couple of real high-level slides of some of these customizations I just sort of flew through on that other one. So as I mentioned a moment ago, with DirSync, you really only get the AD data from the profile going from...
And there's like 10 or 11 properties, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That ends up in SPO.
Yeah, it goes right through DirSync and the sync daemon and SPODS, MSODS, gets into UPA, and you're like, oh, that's not very much stuff. What about all these other properties? Because I don't know about you guys, but we had properties, as you see here, coming from three different sources. We have our AD data. We had all the great SharePoint data. And when I say that, I don't mean the out-of-box SharePoint profile fields.
You mean, about me and...
Yeah, but also other fields that we added. You know, we added some other fields that weren't in SharePoint that we said, hey, this is great. We want to, you know, as we were working on a lot of those MySite customizations Steve asked me about at the beginning of the hour, we also added those fields, mapped them to... term sets in our managed metadata service, and so we wanted to preserve that data as well. And then finally, LOB feed data, that's stuff that's coming from essentially our HR systems. You know, when were you hired? What is your official HR title? Those types of things. Wanted to get those up into the profile as well, because I don't think I need to say this, but all that profile data, we have reasons for wanting that data there as well as you guys do too. For discovery, to really help enrich that people search experience.
What office is that guy in? What?
Yeah. And then also just really to really enrich even the social means. You know, when people are communicating, you can quickly go and go to somebody's profile, because once we get this stuff up into that profile and then we start showing it off on people's profile pages, it's really helped the collaboration, the discovery, and awareness of the rest of the community.
And you may or may not be using... maybe workflows that depend on some custom property that when you move that site to the cloud, if that property's not there, probably not going to work anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we built was really something that's kind of based on the UPRE, the User Profile Replication Engine. And really the change here was that we just had to deal with the authentication piece to go from an on-prem UPA service and sync that data to the online one. And that
so the authentication model changed.
It did change. You want to tell them about that? Is that something we need to talk much about?
Does anybody want to hear about that? I see no hands, so let's go on.
All right. We did have to deal with that, though. So our tool is actually runs as an elevated service account to essentially grab that data from the on-prem user profile service and actually replicate it up to the online one. And what's nice about this tool is we can do a one-time sync, let me rephrase that, a one-time replication, or we can actually set up a sync. So really depending on your needs, and in this case our needs, if we were actually going to keep some data on-prem and allow users to edit that data, we would definitely have to set up some type of job to replicate that data. In our case, what we really wanted to do is, as I said earlier, lock the on-prem profile, make the master the online one, get the data up there, and then encourage users to start using that one. Yeah. Now, that being said, there are a couple of properties that we are, for the time being, while we're still in this hybrid state, We need to push those properties back down to on-prem AD and on-prem UPA. So we will do that. And that's actually that purple box down below, the photo sync. We have a really complex environment that I hope none of you have, where we've got some people running Exchange 14 on-prem, Exchange 15 online, Link 2013 beta, and all of a sudden they've got this really complex environment, and it's amazing how many people are just like, wait a minute, I changed my photo in my profile, how come Outlook or Link isn't showing that photo? And we acknowledge that that is a problem. So,
yeah. So we did invest heavily in the product from on the O365 side, yeah. Where if your mailbox is in Exchange online and you're using SharePoint online, you change your picture, it changes it everywhere. It's awesome. We love it. Doesn't work across the hybrid cloud boundary. Yeah. So that's why the need for this tool arose.
And this is also where the benefits of we go through some of this pain so we can save you guys from it. So we actually, there is a fix here where there is some properties that we were able to leverage some existing customizations we had done to essentially pick up a new profile property, and we're going to actually pick up a user's photo change and then sync it back to on-prem AD. And these customizations I'm talking about, we are looking to make this information available to folks through white papers and
yep.
So that we can share how we did this stuff. So if some of these scenarios sound like, yeah, we're probably going to be in this state as well, or we're going to want to take advantage of this type of data replication scenario as well, we're happy to share this information with you.
So one of the things that we did, if you've seen 2013, you see that our new personal site, First Run Experience, looks very similar to this, but not exactly.
We tried very
hard to keep it close and keep it in line. But MSIT had a few additional requirements. So they needed to collect additional data from the end users. A couple of different pieces. One, hey, give us some confirmation that you realize that your data is going to be in North America, mm-hmm. right? And then the
getting social, yeah.
Getting social piece. Yeah. So the default in SharePoint is that these social activity check boxes in the profile are turned off by default.
That's right. That's right.
And there's some reasons behind that, compliance and stuff I don't fully understand. But MSIT really wanted to jumpstart the social without people having to know, I've got to go tick those six boxes on the backside of my profile. And so we wanted to add one checkbox to say, hey, let others know what you're working on, and make that really, really easy for people so that we could start really populating that social feed.
And by the way, all it does is it actually passes this option to an out-of-box web method to go and enable those profile settings. So now a user will be essentially set up to receive social notifications, anything they post to the news feed. And again, because we were launching My early, we wanted to make sure that people didn't go to the cloud, go to their news feed page, and nothing was happening. So we wanted to make sure that we were helping them understand, hey, we're going to go ahead and enable these features. You can still go into your profile settings and disable them or tweak them as you need to, but let's go ahead and get you started initially. And this program was very well received and helped people jump start early into the social,
yep.
new social features.
And before we move away from it, something that's fairly important, the very first question there, we looked at an audit of all the personal sites, and we also sent some questionnaires out to a sampling of the user base, and we found out that a vast majority of the people who you were using their personal sites in 2010 really didn't care to bring that stuff along to the cloud. And so we wanted to give them an option to say, hey, I'm going to just copy the files I care about. You can just not worry about migrating me because I want to be social today. I want to get there and start using Folder Sync today. So this enabled us to be able to do that.
Yeah, I'd love to know from folks in the audience if this is something that you anticipate is going to be, is of concern or issue in your business. I mean, what we have found is we had a real interesting mix of folks in how they use their My sites, but I think the document repositories were less used than maybe creating a subweb for running a project or managing a project, and then they would either move that collateral to some team site archive, and then they would just have essentially residual subwebs just sitting there. And so they weren't as concerned, like Steve said, about moving that stuff over. Now, obviously, we anticipate with all the advantages you get with SkyDrive Pro and folder synchronization, now people are going to say, oh, no, this is going to be my primary library. We'll need to make sure that we can support that going forward. Right, Steve?
Yep. We won't get to take this approach for the next version of SharePoint. That's right.
Okay.
So we do, and users who cared about their blogs needed to wait for us to be able to migrate them.
Great question, yeah.
Good question, though, but that was, Sean talked about the subsites people didn't care about. The subsite blog, the blog subsite was the one they did care about. So, yeah, definitely. And then we needed to collect that event also to do things like lock their on-prem site or to queue them up in a migration. So this gave us the ability, because there's really no model for you to hook into the personal site creation event. This was the way to do it.
Yeah, that's a great point. So essentially the first run experience, the My Site instantiation, is a web part now. So it was very easy for us. And so I just call this out because, again, you know, we want to be really transparent with you why we elected to do some of these customizations. But I want to also stress that these customizations are very much in the realm of a customization
mere
that
mortals.
You might want to have to do. What's that?
Of mere mortals.
Of mere mortals, yes. Because all we really needed to do was move that first, essentially that site creation web part onto another page so we could actually present this form. Once the user complied with it, we would just call that page and fire off that site creation event. And what's really nice about this is we were also writing this data into a SharePoint list with a bunch of index columns, making it very easy for us to run reports, because obviously we were also interested in understanding what was the uptake, what were people electing to do, and we wanted to help identify users who had those blogs that they wanted to keep so that we can go and target those folks and say, hey, you need your site migrated, let's get your site migrated, and here's how it's going to happen.
Let's just click through. So we talked a lot about AutoSites governance solution. So there's two pieces to AutoSites. AutoSites is a tool that MSIT had before in their on-prem installation. And I've put a nice little bubble there at the bottom for SPC 251. Mr. Philip Newman sitting in the front here. You can either get in your time machine and go back to yesterday and see his presentation, or you can go see the recording in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So. If you want to know about AutoSites, then I'd say go look at Philip's solution. But we'll give you a high level. There's really two major pieces to AutoSites. There's site creation. So there's the ability for users to just go self-service, create a site collection for themselves. We need to collect some data. We need to enforce some policy, make them aware of some policy, so on and so forth. And then it also does policy enforcement. So it goes, you know, if you've told me this is super secret data, and then later I go do things that you shouldn't do with super secret data, we can take some action. You know, don't share super secret data with everyone in the company. We may need to troll through those sites and make sure that you didn't do that post facto. And so that tool, that's I'd say a very high level, but that probably accounts the majority of that. Yep. And then if you go ahead and click through, the really cool thing in SharePoint 2013 is that you now have the ability to insert your own logic for self-service site creation. So we've been told over and over and over by hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different customers, hey, I want to be able to customize self-service site creation because the one you guys give me just doesn't cut it. And rather than try to go off and boil the ocean and build something that meets the needs of every single customer in the world, we decided, let's make it extensible, okay? So you'll see that right here, this is just a snap off of our production tenancy. I clicked new site. It says start a new site. It looks like it's in the page with SharePoint. That form is actually hosted in Azure. So end users, to them, it just feels like it's natural. It's right there. But this is not a SharePoint customization. So good stuff.
And this is where we're setting it.
Yep, and here's where the settings are. So in Office 365, if you go into the tenant admin settings, you can see that there's some settings down here, and you can say show the start a site link, and then you tick the checkbox that says show the form at this URL, and you just give them the URL to your Azure app. So pretty sweet. And then on-prem, the settings are still there. They're not at the tenant level. They're at the web app level. But you can still do the same thing on-prem. So my brain starts spinning, and I immediately am like, hey, can I have one Azure thing that controls both my on-prem and my online farm? You could take what we did one step further and do just that. There's remote PowerShell. There's options to do the same thing with your on-prem farm. So, all right, so now the meaty topic, migration. We had a 36-terabyte dilemma. Right? Our goal was to migrate all of the SharePoint platforms while maintaining the user experience. The supported methods for migrating, third-party migration tools. So there's a number of vendors that we know and we love. those are the guys that you're going to be working with to get your migration done in the cloud. And when I say migration in the cloud, I do mean in the multi-tenant Office 365 cloud. That's where MSIT moved. You know, a lot of people used to tell us, hey, yeah, multi-tenant, that thing's not for big companies, that's not for enterprises. I would beg to differ at this point.
We're going to show it can work.
That's right. So there is there's a number of vendors, and I won't really go through the pros, you know, the suite of them. Anyway, there are some unsupported methods that may be supported. So somebody might tell you, well, O365 does support a database backup and restore. What they mean is our dedicated offering, okay, and it's different. So things may change in the future. But those are two different things, multi-tenant and dedicated, so I wanted to try to clarify that confusion a little bit. Full disclosure, open kimono here. We did experiment with both of those approaches with MSIT as well, trying to see if we could come up with a method that we felt we could offer to our customers in multi-tenant. I don't think we decided that's something we want to embark upon at this point. So right now the supported method is the third-party migration tool. So if we talk about how the migration went utilizing the vendor tools, we took the source 14 content databases, we mirrored them, we broke the mirror of the content databases, and we scrubbed out the customizations that were in there that we needed to pull out. And then we had a goal of limiting the downtime to a weekend maintenance window.
Yeah.
One of the really cool things, and the slide still says Quest, I guess we should change it to Dell. was their tool actually had the ability to do incremental syncs. And so what we did is we actually did a full restore to SharePoint Online with the Quest tool. We got about a gigabyte an hour throughput. So you can do the math yourself on how long it would take you to move 36 terabytes of data, but it takes a little while. So you want to chunk your migrations up into manageable things that you can do over a reasonable period of time without impacting your users.
And it got better as we iterated.
It did, and as we iterated, it did get better.
Yeah.
The sites, when we did that full backup and restore, the sites actually stayed in read-write mode, so the users were still using their sites on-prem.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we did incremental syncs continuously for, I think it was about 2 weeks, I believe. And then the sites on-prem were set to read-only so that no more change could come in, and we did the last incremental over a period of a weekend and redirected the on-prem sites to the cloud. So very high level, but that was really the process that we used for doing the migration. We were pleasantly surprised with the throughput that we actually got with this migration approach.
And one of the things we should call out here, too, is that, you know, while we're continuing to refine and work with the folks on this approach and looking at some of our other properties as candidates for this approach, we're also looking, having those discussions, as we alluded to at the beginning of the hour, of are we forklifting your site to the cloud, or are we figuring out how to re-architect your site to the cloud? I'll be honest with you guys. Some of our properties on-prem that we showed in the beginning of the slide, that existing on-prem footprint, those sites are definitely great contenders to say, you know what, these content programs could probably be, you know, revised and thrown into a site community and using a new community site template. Some of the content programs probably need to be retired or could be collapsed. And so we're having those conversations
as publishing well. Portals.
If you took
a publishing portal and how you built it and how you had to do it in 2007 and you carried forward to 2010, definitely take that as an opportunity to rethink that, right? You've got a lot of new features with content by search and some of those things that might come into play there. We're talking about the cloud. I guess I should hush. But
Yes. All right. Content by query, though. Right.
Yeah, content by query.
So. Yeah, please.
Was RBS involved? No. We did not have remote blob storage. Is that what you're in reference to?
Yeah. So all the content that we have on Academy, is that still on-premises?
Academy is still on-premise. That's one of those line of business applications that we have not moved yet. That's right. So we're actively working with the ECM team in SharePoint to come up with a strategy for how we want to do video in the cloud. And we will be publishing that when we get that.
Yeah, so just to continue on the Academy thought for a moment. So one of the things, let's say if we did move,
When.
Since a lot of that content is outside of SharePoint, we'd be able to use a lot of this to move those content DBs to O365. But then as far as where those blob files are going to go, are we going to move them to Azure Media Services? I don't know if you were at that session, if you saw that chart that Rhonda showed. We're looking at some of those other services to host those video files. And then obviously it's going to be more of a link fix-up to make sure that we're pointing to those new locations from the new Academy Online experience. But they wouldn't have to be affected by this. Yeah. Good question.
That's a good question. If you'll come up after, we can talk about it. I can't speak to every vendor tool and what they support, but there are vendor tools who can pull the remote blobs with the data that when they're doing the backups to do the incrementals. So it's really a question for the vendor. Okay. And we're down to 15 minutes, so let's. We wanted to summarize some of the migration considerations here. I'm not going to just read this slide to you, but
I think we covered a lot of these. Actually,
we did.
Steve.
We covered a lot of them.
Yeah.
So I think a big one was really that licensing. We did talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then social. Oh, so one really cool thing that we learned moving to the cloud and with these new social capabilities, and this really isn't anything to do with migration other than supporting your migration. How many people here have users that just love calling the help desk? Now, they love calling the help desk because they want to talk to the help desk, or they love calling the help desk because they want help?
Both.
Okay, well, the one that just loves to talk to somebody because they're lonely, we can't help them. But what we did notice was that just like in the external social networks, the first thing people did when they had problems, what did they do? They complained in the feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, and then when you would say, hey, open a help desk ticket, they were resistant to that. They're like, you're right here. You're with me. You're in the feed with me. Why are you going to make me go jump through hoops? So MSIT actually created a service account for their help desk.
Yep.
And they used that to troll the feeds.
And then plus hashtags.
And then hashtags,
yeah,
that's right.
And really what ended up happening was that helped us in a couple of ways. It not only helped us with sort of capturing this fallout of the deflected help desk calls that still needed help.
That's right.
But it actually also allowed us to really open up and amplify the dog food feedback that we were looking for, because it allowed us to, actually turn that on folks and say, hey, what do you think about this feature? How's this working out for you as we help them? Can you help us, is this piece working for you? And we actually got a lot of bugs filed that way and got a lot of folks' issues addressed much more quickly than I think some of the more traditional channels. So that was a pretty cool thing. Again, sort of amplifying what we're saying about, don't wait until everything's done and ready to go. See what you can do to start moving folks over early.
And one other thing that I'll call out in the prep that we've got bullet point down there is you have one tenant in SharePoint Online that you can sync your directory to. So you don't have a pre-production environment. Now you can spin up a test tenancy or some other tenancy, go sign up for a tenant to just kind of test things out and play with things, but you will be using production for your migration dry runs. You will migrate. If you don't like it, delete it, start again. That's a little foreign to a lot of IT pros, but it is a fact of reality, so keep that in mind.
Sir, do you have a question?
Question on your social comment there with the help desk.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you have a quote-unquote Tom user that everyone automatically followed so you could send a message through the social network to your users?
We did not do that.
We did something like that. We didn't set it up so that people would follow him, but rather the other way around. We set up a mail-enabled account so that either the users or us could reference that to make sure that the person monitoring that account would get the notifications. So if you're familiar with the way that the SharePoint social streams work, and Yammer works the same way, is you can set it up where if somebody at mentions you, you'll get an email notification. So we would use that as another receipt mechanism. So we would use email inboxes as a way to get awareness of an issue that somebody had reported in the social feed. Does that make sense?
Yeah. We're running close. Let's flip on through.
All right.
We can skip this slide.
We're
not there yet. This is
That's the summary of this slide. We're not in the cloud 100% yet. There's some things in our way. We're getting there. We're working through them. Like we said at the beginning of the hour, this is a case study in progress.
That's right. So we do a recap of the lessons learned. In the preparation side, understand your environment. Dry runs equals production. Again, that was a very foreign concept to our partners in MSIT.
Yeah, thanks for that, Steve. Yeah.
But we got over it, and it worked.
We did, yes.
That's right. Our cloud is durable. So define acceptable user experience prior to migration starting. I will say that we took an approach that we probably, looking in hindsight, might not take again, with kind of pushing people to go self-migrate. We were a little aggressive about that because we wanted to get folks up there and get social. We probably would have toned that down just a little bit and done less pushing and more, cajoling, I guess. And then from a performance perspective, prioritize your content. Migration's not instant. You know, the content that a vast majority of users use, or if you've got site collections that receive a lot of traffic, move those first. Get those off of your infrastructure and get those to the cloud. You'll get a lot more adoption because once people start going and using a team site in the cloud, all of a sudden, wow, huh, maybe I should get my personal site so I can be social with this news feed and this new team site. So pick a few real high-impact properties and move those guys up there first. And then support, we talked about that. Lock down your support model and understand the different ways that people, when they have these social capabilities, will actually vent their frustrations. And make use of that, and don't force your folks to call some phone number and pick up the phone on the other end. You can be a lot more productive and effective helping those users in the social feed. Yeah. So.
And I would just add one more thing. I think that as some of you may have surmised from some of the comments we've said already, we have some of the big boulders we still need to deal with to get to the cloud, and those are like those real heavily customized content portals with lots of full trust code solutions and. We're very excited to figure out how we're going to move some of those, how we're going to re-architect some of those, how we're going to enable them, really, in our hybrid environment that we'll be in for a while. So,
and that's what you and I get to start doing now.
Yeah, after Thanksgiving. Yeah, so, all right. So I think that is it. We wanted to give time for a few folks that are here if you had any other questions.
I know everybody wants to get to ask the experts, but if we've got a few minutes here, if anybody has any additional questions, feel free to step up to the mic.
So on your slide, you said you're hitting about a gigabyte an hour, which, if my math is right, is about 4 years to move up 36 terabytes. Are you accelerating that, or are you going to take 4 years until you have Office 365?
The 4 years actually takes into account the fact that we have to do the customizations and all these other custom portals, and I think that takes the entire corpus of data into account. Some of that stuff's going to stay on-prem, so... it's not direct math to do the gigabyte an hour to the 4 years, but it takes a while.
And we're hoping to improve it, though.
We are hoping to improve it, and vendors, working in partnership with MSIT, we're desperately trying to find ways that are faster, more performant. But it is a hard problem to solve. It really is. All right. Any other questions?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. They are not available for customers to use. What I will commit at a minimum is that we will produce white papers and make sure that you understand how to build these tools. We are in active discussions on a release mechanism potentially in the future. We have not landed on those. These are tools that were developed by MSIT, and while we have a very close partnership with MSIT, the product group, okay, because we have experience with this, the product group knows that if we release this tool, it better be rock solid, and if it has bugs in it, somebody has to be signed up to fix it. And right now, MSIT doesn't have a sustained engineering organization for the world. So we're in active negotiations as to what teams within SharePoint feel that the value here outweighs the work that they'll have to take on sustaining. So at a minimum, you'll get white papers. I have great hope that at some point in the future, we could get these rolled into the product.
But yeah, we are definitely eager to share some of these, you know, and some of these challenges we're also trying to address so that some of the customizations we've talked about maybe become non-issues for folks later on, you know, as Steve alludes to. Yeah, maybe
we would prefer to actually enhance the product to make it where you don't need these, but in the near term, we have a strategy of we're going to get white papers out on how to do it and what properties you need to to interact with, and how, you know, code samples of note and things of that nature. But releasing downloadable compiled code requires us in Microsoft to go through a pretty hefty set of hurdles to make sure that the code quality is up there and, you know, it's ready for public consumption. Go ahead.
So we used to. But again, I think the problem with CodePlex is there's certain expectations with Microsoft releasing things in CodePlex to make sure that we have an appropriate and sufficient support channel there.
But Scott Gu has blazed a new trail for us to investigate there as far as our ability to publish open source software. We in the office division aren't in the same division with those folks, but we're talking. We're trying to figure out a good release mechanism.
And even some of these customizations we shared with you today, they're a mix of, some of them are just console apps, you know, running compiled code on a local machine and being run, whereas all that first run override experience was actually just some JavaScripts that we put in the master page. Like, yeah. Literally, it was very minimal code customizations. So things that folks of you who actually, you know, get down and dirty with SharePoint, open it up in Designer and do some customizations yourself, they're not really that, they're not that unreasonable. So yeah. We're happy to share the information, though, of course.
Yeah.
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 Surprisingly.
Can you talk a little bit more about how many people or how many groups you had to do that, and how extensive those migrations got to be?
Well, what we
were moving their documents, or did you have
yes.
entire yeah. teams doing their
oh,
people,
I see.
People
yeah.
moving their documents. I mean, these weren't people who had big lists with thousands and thousands of items or anything like that. We didn't publish any kind of, you know, hey, here's how to use the Quest migration tools to move your own stuff. We didn't do any of that. This was really just people who had created team sites to store docs. And it was just easier for them to go copy those 37 documents or 300 documents over to the new environment because they wanted to use the social features. They were excited. So we left that open as an option for them. We gave them that guidance, and we were surprised that quite a few people actually took us up on it.
Yeah, I think to this gentleman's question earlier, the folks who said, no, I really need you to migrate me because I've got a blog with 300 posts or whatever, those are the folks that obviously went into the migration queue that we did for some of the initial team sites that we moved over. But again, as Steve just said, I mean, once somebody provisioned their new My Site, then what they do is they just open up their on-prem one, set up the folder sync, and frankly that helped out with a lot of folks. Yeah, and so once they had all their content moved over, they were done, because we've already taken care of moving their profile over. Yeah.
So I have a question regarding broken links. I'm just wondering what your approach is going to be for that.
Broken links within the content.
Yeah, within the content. So after you've moved it over, clearly there'll be links within documents and other areas that will be on-prem, and you've moved everything over to new URLs.
So we took a strategy of we have Redirector on-prem that's actually sending them to the new location in the cloud. That didn't fix the links in the docs, but it gives us a mechanism to at least get them to the right place. But as far as the actual links to outside of the Word documents and things of that nature, the links in the site pages, the migration tools actually took care of fixing those up. There's a mapping that you go through when you run the migration tool. It fixes up identities, it fixes up group ACLs, and it also fixes up links.
But some links also aren't going to get fixed up without a content publishing process.
That's right.
So a great example would be MSW, still on-prem. They actually provide links to all of our executives who maintain blogs. So when we moved their blogs up to the cloud, obviously they had to do a link fix up themselves because they're pointing to an old site that's no longer there. And we weren't maintaining those redirects because we want to bring those farms down. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Workflow migrations. So the workflow. So I know the...
workflows had to be rebuilt.
I honestly can get you a contact for all the detail you want around workflows. If you should come up, give me your contact info afterwards. We did have a challenge there, yes.
Please.
A question about, you said AD sync. You did an AD sync with the on-prem and in the cloud.
Yep. Yeah.
Are y'all doing anything with the claims based that everything's talking about now for 13 and
so,
AD?
Claims based. So we are using the O365 authentication mechanism, which is FBA claims in the cloud. And so we had to do a mapping. We had to maintain a mapping of the users from on-prem to the cloud for the migration tool to be able to know that your, you know, domain whack username is username at domain. We had to maintain a mapping of that. But as far as utilizing claims, we're just using what the cloud gives us. Make sense? Okay. One over here? No?
I think we're about out of time. For those who stuck around, thank you so much for your time and attention. Thanks.
Appreciate it.